Broadcast Network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans. Producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows. Interviewing celebrities and showrunners. And bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Hey there, Banshees! Welcome back to the Banshee After Show here on AfterBuzz TV, talking about Season 3, Episode 3, A Fixer of Sorts. I am Matt Lieberman. Joining me as always, Monis Rose is here.
Hey, what's going on?
Oriana Leo is
here. Hi, Banshees.
And Isaac Johnson is here.
Hello, everybody.
Yes, and we have a very, very special guest in the studio with us today, Adam Targum, who's one of the executive producers on the show. He's written a whole bunch of episodes. We're so happy to have him. Welcome, Adam.
Happy to be here.
Thanks, yes, guys. Glad that you're here. We also have another special guest coming in via phone. Mr. Matthew Rausch, who plays Mr. Burton, is going to be calling us in about 8 minutes. So we're gonna jump right in. So here's the thing about this episode, and a lot of the fans I think have really, really enjoyed it just based on their responses on Twitter. Yeah. You know, it's one of the best action episodes that I feel like we've ever done. They've ever done. But I'm of two minds about it because I think there's so much plot in this town. Mm-hmm. I don't want to waste any time bringing in outside people mucking things up. But at the same time, it's a very well-produced episode, and it lends a lot of fuel to a bunch of storylines, and it's going to fuel the rest of the season. What did you guys think?
Yeah, well, in comparison to the first two episodes, this is like the most action-heavy we've gotten, so that's probably why it feels like maybe like the best of the season or something like that, but like just awesome, amazing action, like on the edge of my seat the entire time.
Mm-hmm. I was definitely had bated breath the entire episode. I did miss Carrie and Deva and some of our other faces in town.
Yeah.
Hoping to see them again. And actually I was quite shocked that Hood did not have any Carrie visions.
Yeah. Interesting point to point out.
Yeah.
Is that emotionally, who does he go to? He goes to Deva and he goes to Siobhan. Yeah.
What did you think of the episode, Monis?
Monis is too busy chuckling.
We all see the episodes together, and I'm sure, you know, these fine three are eyewitnesses of me in my seat. It's like I'm in a race car. My feet are up, and I'm squealing, and I'm jumping around. I mean, I am so interactive, especially this episode. I mean, they got a little foreshadow in last season's season finale, and this episode, no, I was in a NASCAR. It was a ride.
That's a beautiful description. Adam, when you guys were breaking this episode, what was going through your heads? Why bring back the Brantley plot line?
Well, first of all, I love this reaction from all of you, because this is exactly why we do what we do. We write this show for the fans.
Yeah.
And we are all fans ourselves. So, you know, we have several mandates when we sit down and break a season and come up with storylines. First of all, it's to jam more story into an episode than most shows do an entire season.
And you do.
Mission accomplished.
Yes.
You know, and the other thing is to do things that people have seen, but do them in a way that's uniquely Banshee. Mm-hmm. You know, we always say, what's the Banshee version of a fight? You know, what's the Banshee version of a moonlight, you know, dinner, you know? And that being said, you know, this episode accomplishes a lot of things. Obviously, we have tremendous action. But everything does also move character and plot forward. Mm-hmm. You know, all of the things you guys touched on do come back in a certain way. We don't like dangling sort of, you know, Chads and Banshee. Mm-hmm. It may not come back for three seasons, but it's going to come back at some point. Yeah. So.
Fantastic. So let's jump into this brewing war between Kai and Chayton. A lot of interesting stuff happening on both sides of that. We have this great scene between Kai and his mother at the top of the episode where she pretty much points out, listen, I know what's going on. You need to get her out of here.
Yucky.
Right. I raised you better than this. I mean, well, I didn't raise you that well, but I raised you better than that.
Well, yeah. Which is possibly a confirmation because we sort of debated, like, are they sleeping together? I mean, they're in bed together naked. It would lead you to that assumption, but it seems like she knows what's going on.
It's inappropriate all around. Right. She's just saying
obviously,
so.
Obviously, yeah.
Yeah, and just a mother knows. And it also, there's this connection, it seems, between Kai and Emily. Mm-hmm. She sees something in him. She sees, you know, we had Lonnie in here last week, and he was talking about how she sees, like, the potential and the good
fixer-upper
in everyone, a fixer of sorts. Mm-hmm. And and they have this, like, really beautiful, quiet moment in his little chapel. And there's a point where he turns away and he goes and kneels, and I feel like anyone else would accept, okay, he needs some time to be alone. But instead, she shares that moment with him and lends him her support. Mm-hmm. And I have to wonder if his mother's message of you need to find someone who's good for you and will do right by you and isn't your niece, if he's considering something in this moment. Because I can't remember. I'm not sure if there's ever been a time where someone actually sat down and tried to connect with him.
No. And have any of you seen The Origins? Banshee Origins.
I've seen a couple of them. I haven't seen them all.
You have? I've seen a few of them, and there is one, I think it's the third, where Emily and Kai, they know each other. Oh. They've seen each other. They've been around each other before.
Okay.
So While she and Brock were still together.
Oh, interesting.
You know, I will be honest, the Proctor-Rebecca relationship has been one of the most polarizing, you know, storylines. There are people that love it. There are people that hate it. Everybody talks about it.
Yeah.
It was really important for us to have that scene with Kai and his mother because, as you said, mother is the only one that can really affect Kai Proctor in the way that he's untouchable. Yeah. You know, nobody else bothers him. No one can, you know, get to the Teflon Proctor. But when she says, you know, you need to move her out of that house. It's unholy. It's unnatural. Yeah. It affects him, and it affects him deeply. But again, you guys also talked about, you know, seeing Proctor's vulnerability. Mm-hmm. Everybody on Banshee has a certain level of humanity.
Yeah,
we don't deal with good characters and bad characters. Everybody lives in the gray on the show.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's why we're able to do such, you know, heightened action sequences, but then also find really grounded character and tell stories that are so relatable. I can't imagine any of us are going to ever have a tomahawk fight.
True.
I hope none of us will.
In my dreams.
Maybe Manus.
Right.
Oh, yes.
Right.
Absolutely.
You know, but I think all of the other issues, those grounded issues with wanting, you know, a place to belong in the world and wanting our mother's approval and wanting to be loved, you know, those are all universal themes. And I think that's what always brings the show back to a place where you go, okay, I get it. I get it. This could actually happen. Kind of, maybe, sort of.
Yeah,
kind of,
maybe, sort of.
I really dug that. There's like a line in like 310 to Yuma, if anybody's seen that movie, but even bad men love their mothers. You know, and her asking him that question, who will love you, Kai? And then him also turning to prayer, which we've never seen him go back to his religion, which was like such great character development.
Yes, and I will tell you, spoiler alert, that all of these things actually obviously pay off and lead to larger arcs. You know, cool. And so nothing is wasted on Banshee.
Although there's an origin that has him praying after he fights somebody. Mm-hmm.
Not seen that one yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're going to have to watch it, everyone. I'm telling you, Origins.
Well, I feel like it's always been a very present part of his character, whether or not he observes or practices. His religion and how he was brought up very much informs everything that he does, whether through negative reinforcement of how things ended or of the pure tenets that he was raised on. I mean, you never forget the first rules that you're taught.
Sure, yeah.
Well, and he wears his god on his back.
It's
we have
true.
Seen his
That's
tattoo
true.
Many oh, yes. times when he's practicing on his wooden, what do you call that, thing?
Yes, his yes. His thing.
His thing, his
fighting
training
partner,
thing.
His wooden fighting
you
partner.
You know, it's funny, you mentioned the origins, and apropos of that, the thing we talk about so much with the actors and just as we're sitting in a writer's room is what is the origin of these characters? You know, monsters aren't born, they're made. And Kai Proctor is the most interesting character because he's an evolution. In a lot of ways, Kai Proctor is a victim. Mm-hmm. You know, and to get to the place where he has become victimizer, that's a road.
Yeah.
And there's a journey there. And it's really important that we start to really unpeel those layers of the onion right now, especially as the show moves into its third season, that there really is, you know, a maturation of these characters. And it's not just violence for violence's sake, but there's something behind it.
Yeah.
And we continue to explore that this season.
And yeah, we're really seeing, you know, Proctor's breaking points. I mean, of, you know, you mentioned the Teflon. Towards the end of the episode, the glass, we saw the glassiness of his eye, you know. I mean, even with Burton, who's about to, you know, Burton, I mean, we're getting a little bit of like a twinkle maybe it's of more a pain, but still it's of emotion even in Burton's eyes as well.
So. Well, speaking of Burton, I believe we have Matthew Roush on the line with us. Hey, how are Matthew. You? Calling in from the blizzard.
Hey guys. Matt.
Yeah. Welcome How to the show. Guys? We're doing very, very well. This was a hell of an Good. Episode for you. Were you jazzed to finally see it?
I was really happy to finally see it. First of all, thank you for having me. It's very cool to be on the show. I appreciate it. I like all the stuff you do, and it's really a pleasure to be here.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
I have to be very, very nice because, you know, you're sitting there with my boss right now. it was really exciting to see the episode. I had seen a rough cut of that episode, but the truth is, you know, we joke about it on the show where we're all sort of fans of Banshee. So when the episodes finally air, it's kind of like, oh, I finally get to see it. I sort of rush home on Friday night at 10 o'clock so I can watch the show and live tweet with the fans. And this episode was particularly gratifying. There were a lot of people who worked very, very hard to make this sequence, which the fans and the critics have responded so strongly to, and you know, it wasn't just Codette and I up there banging away at each other. There were a lot of people involved and a lot of man hours that went into making it. It was very gratifying to be up there and have the response that has been really kind of overwhelming, actually.
Yeah.
I will say he's being very modest because a lot of the heavy lifting was Matt and Odette. I believe what six weeks you rehearsed and trained for this fight.
I trained physically for it was 6 weeks of physical training and then about 3 weeks of actual choreography training and then a week of Odette and I together.
And a little bit of a secret: there may have been a sprained ankle at some point early on before he started the training.
It's possible. There's rumor that there was some kind of torn ligament situation in my ankle, but I, you know, like a football player, we just don't discuss injury.
And never once complained. No,
question. Even, you know, Lonnie talked about everyone, himself, he had to see the raid and the raid too. Was that part of the research and training? Everyone had to see these amazing action movies. Like, did they come to you, Matt, and say, yeah, this is kind of what the fight scene is going to look like. It's going to look like these two badass action movies.
It's funny. The people who approached me about the fight sequence, who originally I think the people I talked to first were Lonnie and Greg and then Adam and also Marcus, our stunt coordinator, the language that they were speaking in was a language that I knew and liked. I like action movies. I enjoy action sequences, and I had seen a lot of the references that they were talking about. What was really exciting to me, and I think also to Odette, was that they said to us, what we want to do is the best fight we've ever done on Banshee. We really want to make an event out of it. And one of the things that was exciting about it was that it was an event outside of the sort of normal core of regular characters on the show. Mm-hmm. And there was a tremendous effort made on the production team sort of at every level, the stunt coordinators, the training staff, the product, the physical production. There was a lot of little details that went into this. They had to build a special camera rig. They had to carve out a day. They had to change the schedule because the rumor is that somebody got hurt. And there was all this stuff that happened, and ultimately it ended up being a crazy 14-hour shooting day that was extraordinarily difficult and rewarding. But the references that we had, I think, were things that everybody was very familiar with. I don't know people who are fans of movies and TV who haven't seen Raid. Like, that's just an incredible movie, and there's some incredible sequences there, and I think anybody who likes things like Banshee are going to be familiar with things like that.
Yeah, so, and to give you guys,
I knew what they were talking about.
Now, it's good to give a little insight into the process. We script every single punch and every single kick.
Wow.
And it's very important. And you know, when Jonathan and I put a script out there that has every single one of those beats, we then hand it off to the team. And it's a vast team. Mm-hmm. You know, as Matt was talking about Marcus Young, who is our stunt coordinator, he then takes that and brings it to his team. Mm-hmm. You know, the most talented group of stunt performers who then work it all out and then actually do something called a previz, where they actually will shoot the sequence for then all of us to see and then for the actors to see. You know, there's something interesting about this fight is that it didn't initially start with a car. It had initially started in a different location that, you know.
That's right. I was talking about this with someone the other day, that we were initially in another location, and then due to the, there were sort of technical issues with the location.
Right.
And then, I believe, I'm going to give him a little shout out here. I believe it was Mr. Targum sitting next to you who had the insanely cool idea of shooting the fight outside and inside the car, and simultaneously destroying that amazing Rolls Royce.
He just got so amazed.
Nice.
Well, what's interesting also about that Rolls Royce is, you know, we did have to destroy that car. We actually, that roof has actually been sawed off as well. Mm. So the roof flew off so we could put it back. Mm. As Matt talked about, there was a special camera rig. The rig was being handed through.
Yeah, Lonnie was telling us that.
A lot of unique
techniques. Yeah. So the fight was really groundbreaking. But the thing that's most important that I just wanted to touch on is that amidst all of that insanity, there's two really important character elements that we really open up talking about origins of characters.
Sure.
And one of them was a great moment for Matt, and one was, you know, a great moment for Odette.
And my note on that was they both have died a little bit. They both had a torturer. They were both captive. Mm-hmm. They were both dehumanized. And that was...
That's an important thing. Yeah, I think that's a very important thing about Banshee is that... aside from the origins, what you're seeing, the writers are very clever about setting up characters in very specific ways on the show. And I think you know that as little as you know about Burton, for example, what you know about Burton is that he's a very, very dangerous guy.
Yeah.
And what you know about Odette, as, you know, as much of a wise-ass and sort of firebrand that she is, you know she's a very, very dangerous woman, I should say Nola. And putting these characters in a situation where, you know, we know the rules on Banshee are basically a fight like this, sort of Clash of the Titans fight, is going to end up in somebody being dead. Mm-hmm. And the added layer of learning that they share, if they don't share a history, but they share a similar, I think that's a good point about they've already died a little bit, and they have less to lose in a fight like this.
Yeah.
And that ultimately... by humanizing them, you raise the stakes on the fight, and you allow the audience a way inside these characters' minds. And it's a very, very clever way of doing both, of serving sort of two masters at once, which is one master being the sort of the kind of pulpy action show, and the other master being a show that is actually interested at the same time in the way, in what makes people tick and being a sort of effective drama. And I love, that's the thing I love the most about Banshee, is that we're able to kind of do both. And a lot of shows don't do that.
Mm-hmm. I agree. A testament. I was talking to somebody the other day, and they said, what makes the show so unique? Mm-hmm. And I said that we can do an episode like you guys just saw, as well as The Truth About Unicorns last season.
Right.
Which is as polar opposite, you know, in tone and scope. And those are the same show in the same universe, and they both work.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why it's so fun. I mean, I truly love my job. I think, Matt, you probably do as well.
Yeah.
You know, it truly is a labor of love for all of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's interesting, though, because I find a level of intimacy in both of those types of episodes that you wouldn't find anywhere else. Because, you know, obviously Truth About Unicorns is an incredibly intimate, small episode. But for, you know, for its multiple storylines this week, all of them were very... small, intimate stories. This fight between Burton and Nola could not be more intimate.
And it ends on a very, very personal note. Mm-hmm. These two people, you know, one barely alive and one just having died, sort of sitting together, leaning against the car, almost like a, it's like a strangely romantic moment.
And
there are all these little moments throughout this episode, 303, you know, which is incredibly action-packed. Adam and I actually spoke earlier today, and we were talking about how action-packed the episode is. But there's a funny, there's interspersing of these very small moments. My personal favorite was Matt Servito's Brock Lotus having the very private and personal conversation with Platinum.
With two M's.
Paper, you know?
Two M's.
Now, Matt, this question is for you. This is Isaac, and this is probably mainly for maybe some of the actors watching, and as an actor myself, I'd like to know.
Yeah.
A lot of times, like, when you're researching a character, you find out, like, how many steps away from you as a person this character is. So I want to know, how many steps away from you is Burton?
You know, it's funny. I I always am a little, I'm a little always puzzled as to how to answer acting questions because I know how it works for me, and I know every actor's process is really different. I have a very specific process for each character that I play, for each job that I do. Burton came to me in a very specific way when I first auditioned for the role and I read Jonathan's script. There was one scene in the audition, and it was just one of those things where they sent it to me, and I knew instantly who this person was. I understood him in a way that I don't know that I'll ever be able to explain in an articulate or clear way.
Sure.
And when I did the audition, I actually only did one take in the audition and left and got the job.
Wow.
And so, that has sort of evolved into a thing, into what it is now. But what I will say about that is that I try very hard personally to make the guys that I play as close to me as possible.
Okay.
and not feel like they are totally outside my skin. That the more they share with my own imagination, or the more I can personalize them, the more interesting it is for me to be in the role as an actor. Now, you could say there isn't much acting to Burton. I would respectfully disagree, but I think that I don't think of it as steps away. I think of it as how many steps closer to me can I get,
okay.
You know? And then thinking about what things, the smaller things that set him apart, you know?
Cool.
Burton, for example, is far less vociferous than I am. He speaks a lot less than I do.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. Awesome.
Really quick, what I loved about this action scene more than just the action element is you as the filmmakers, especially like Adam, and you know, you let the scenes breathe. You really, even this 1, 2, 3, you think it's going so fast, you actually pull the audience in more by actually taking a pause. And the most effective, like I really did not care about the slashes, that didn't really affect me, or the pokings. What really actually more affected me was when Burton took out the piece of glass.
Yeah.
And that reminded me of Die Hard. I don't know if either of you saw Die Hard, but the Bruce Willis element of when he is trapped and there is all this glass. Even though you've already seen all of these Bruce Willis, you know, John McClane shoot up everybody, you see him take out, just pause for a minute and take out all of these pieces of glass from his feet. I mean, and that scene, you know, the Burton element is like, that's the pain I felt when he's just inching that shard out of his cheek.
I thought it was a great way of telling the story because, as I recall, Burton never fights with his glasses on, ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this time he was caught off guard.
That's what I was about to say. Mm-hmm. I mean, she catches him really unawares, and the fight begins with Burton's glasses on, which you've never seen before. And the way I thought about the fight is very intricately choreographed and rehearsed, and there are sort of beats of the fight. That was the moment in the fight in my mind where I thought, okay, now you really pissed me off, and we're not playing around anymore.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of fans who have tweeted to me and sent me notes that have said, once your glasses came off, I knew the fight was going to end the way it ended.
Yeah.
And you know, that shot that Bud and Lonnie and Marcus came up with, sort of racking from Odette to Burton. Burton takes his glasses off and then pushes in, and the piece of glass comes out of his face, and then, you know, they're sort of back at it very quickly. I mean, that to me is sort of the center of the fight, and she kind of owns the beginning of the fight, and then towards the end of the fight, he kind of takes it over.
And those are scripted moments. They are, and what we always do when we talk about a fight is, and this is a weird thing to say, but try to bring a certain level of sophistication to it.
Mm-hmm. It's not weird at all.
Well, you know, in terms of, you know, a fight like that, which is about tomahawks and these bizarre, you know, weapons of torture that he finds in the trunk.
Yeah, that
you know,
just has on hand.
What
yeah.
it really comes down to is the humanity. Because for me, my favorite moment is when he reaches into her throat.
Yeah, and he looks her right in the eye.
And that's where they become real people. Mm-hmm. I will say, a few people have thought that particular beat came from me. While most of it did, that moment was Jonathan Tropper, and I want to give him, you know, only because people have said I have a sick mind. It's Jonathan Sick Mind. he's the one that read the fight and go, this is good, but we're missing something. What if he reaches inside her throat and pulls her esophagus out? And I said, okay. So, and there you go. And Matt did it masterfully. So,
yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. I think it's important to note that both Jonathan and Adam are sick-minded people.
Yeah.
Thank you. He's true.
As are the rest of our producers. you know, that moment, you know, there are when you receive a script like this that has, you know, I think it's three full pages of just sort of fight choreography on the page. I read it and I thought, my first thought was, how the hell are we going to do this? And my second thought was, this is awesome. And it, in a funny way, it was sort of, you know, as a guy who's been on the show for 3 years, but is very much sort of present but in the background, all of a sudden I was like, oh my God, what a great opportunity for the fans to finally see Burton in action. It's this guy that we know is really scary and really dangerous, but we never actually quite seen him do his thing. And to set him up like this was an amazing opportunity. And the specificity of the writing and these moments where, you know, this is how Banshee differentiates itself from a sort of standard action show.
And what I want to say,
Nola Longshadow is a very three-dimensional woman. And even Burton, Clay Burton, he's not just a silent killer. I think that fans are I think people start to recognize that
he's got a rich inner life, I think.
Matt said something I just want to touch upon, which is why all of us involved feel like kids in a candy store, is because we write a scene like that and we sit in a writer's room and we, you know, sky's the limit. We say, hey, what if, you know, an aircraft carrier fell into Banshee? Right. You know, we just throw things out there. You know, in most shows, you then sit down with production and you throw those crazy ideas out there and they go, well, we can't quite do that, but let's do this. On Banshee, we come up with the craziest things, it goes to production, and the response is always, cool, let's try it. Let's figure out a way to do it.
Awesome.
And that's what makes the show Banshee. It's also a testament to the collaborative nature of what we do. You know, we have 200-plus people that come together. Everybody has a hand in the making of the show. Mm-hmm. Everybody helps us figure out how to accomplish scenes like that. You know, where on the page you go, wow, never going to happen, and here it is. We've all seen it, you know, come to life. And I'll tell you, it's a thrill for me, you know, 14 years doing this, and every time I see a scene like that on screen, I go, wow, that's awesome, you know?
Matt,
I just have to follow up on that, because there are so many people whose names will sort of never get spoken, who made an incredible difference in sequence like this. And it is interesting that we're, you know, this sequence is, I don't know, it's 5 minutes long in an episode that was 55 minutes long, and I thought it was a hell of an episode. But this sequence alone took literally months of preparation. You know, Marcus Young and his whole team, my stunt double and Odette's stunt double, Bonnie and Dave, the camera department, who basically, they basically invented a camera so that we were able to shoot it in that sort of seamless style. The wardrobe department, the makeup department, the people who sort of the continuity, they were very, very careful about, you know, how much blood is on you at what point in the fight, and how is it affecting you physically? And Marcus choreographed a fight that, you know, it starts out with two people, in one person in tip-top shape and one person with a pretty terrible wound. And I think you can see over the course of the fight that Odette and I are sort of deteriorating over the course of the fight. And those little details, the sort of continuity stuff and the stuff that makes you want to watch it over again, that's a big team effort. You know, on the day we had a lot of people working. We had Magnus on Skype. We had Lonnie on set. We had Marcus actually directing. There were assistant directors. There's so many people that go into this, and it's an amazing thing to watch it happen. And from the beginning of the season last year, when we started to shoot, people were talking about it from day one, and 2 months later, we were shooting it, and I think basically every day something was happening on that fight sequence from the time they started to put it into motion. You know? It's really an amazing process.
That's awesome. Well, Matt, thank you so much for calling in. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we're kind of low on time. We got a lot to talk about, so we have to say goodbye. I'm sorry.
No, I want to stay. What are you talking about?
You want to stay and chat about the rest of the episode?
Yeah, why not?
All right, great. Awesome. Well, all right. Before
you don't kick our guests out, man.
I'm not trying to kick. I'm trying to move it along, okay? I got to marshal a band here. Okay. But first things first, before we move on, I need to really quickly mention iTunes. You know, folks, we here at AfterBuzz TV, I say it every week, we put out over 80, actually now over 100 hours of free after show content per week. It is the widest array, the most abundant amount of after show content anywhere on the web. That is a testament. It is the truth. You can come at me with any kind of facts and figures. I guarantee you we have the widest and best array of after shows anywhere on the net. And the only way that you can support us, we don't want your money, we just want a little bit of your time. Go to iTunes, rate and review the shows that you listen to or that you watch on YouTube. It is quick, it is easy, and it is how we attract sponsors to this network. It's how we keep our doors open and our lights on. Yeah, it's how we also get great guests like Adam, like Matt. It's how we got in touch with Cinemax and why they trust us with such great talent. So, if you like our show, if you like Banshee, support both of them by heading to iTunes, rate and review the show, and any of the others that you care about or that you like here on AfterBuzz TV. It's super helpful. And you also get a great shout-out here on the show. Now, I don't have them prepped right now.
This would be a great time.
To have them prepped, but instead, I was talking and trying to give that my full attention. So I am going to give those shout-outs at the end of the episode. That is a promise. Thank you. Okay, so let's talk about Chaitin real quick. Chaitin kills a deer and is skinning it, kind of ritualistic. Mm-hmm. Tommy is still, he's just on and on and on about wanting to be a part of this thing. He doesn't feel like he's a real part of the Red Bones. You have to remember, last year, he was, you know, like Chaitin's kid brother who the sheriff's department crashed the reservation just to get. He's got to be still stinging from that.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, to have Chaitin so thoroughly rebuff him causes him to do something stupid and drastic. Mm-hmm. Before we get into that shootout, though, I want to talk about the connection between Chaitin and Amy. Now, Chaitin and Tommy used to live with Amy when they were kids, mm-hmm. and she talks about who Chaitin was when he was young mm-hmm. and how she doesn't recognize him. And I love having this little piece of the puzzle to add to know that he wasn't always this warrior mm-hmm. and that it was something that built in him over time, this anger, this rage over how his people have been systematically reduced to living on these reservations and systematically removed from a society where they should rightfully be in charge. Mm-hmm. In his mind, they were here first. I mean, Adam, can you speak to that evolution?
Absolutely. You know, Chaitin is another origin, is another monster who, you know, has been made as opposed to been born that way. Mm-hmm. For us, he is an amalgam of so many different ideologies that he's sort of coddled together on his own. Mm-hmm. You know, there is the Chaitin sort of modality of justice, and mm-hmm. he sees the world in a very sort of myopic way. And that's what makes him such a powerful force. It's also why he keeps coming up against, you know, our hero, obviously Hood, is why we've now pitted him against our antagonist in Proctor. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you talk about origins. There is actually a wonderful origin, which, called Bugs and Thugs, mm-hmm. that Jonathan wrote, which touches upon the first time that Chaitin actually gets a mentor who looks at him, who's, you know, he's a physically imposing guy who up until this point has been just a big sort of muscle-bound guy used for his physicality, and this mentor looks into Chaitin's eyes and essentially sees something much greater in him. And he says, you know, you have the ability, you have the intelligence, you have the conviction to take the Kanaho Nation to the next level and break them free of this tyranny and these bonds. And maybe it's a little bit of a skewed persecution complex that they have, but we really get to see how Chaitin sort of picks that torch up and runs with it and makes it his own.
His identity.
Yes, and Amy becomes the cipher for us to understand that this was a awkward, scared young man who comes from, you know, a broken home, didn't have parents, and, you know, through, you know, a series of events is born into this, you know, this force to be reckoned with. So,
you know, we were talking before about sort of little details and the things that Banshee does to weave a very complex story. And I love this, the detail of Amy and Chayton having a path together, and she thinks of him sort of as a brother, and the evolution of Chayton from being this kind of rebellious, violent kid to being actually a revolutionary, believing in, you know, changing the world. Those kinds of details give the show an incredible amount of layers on top of the kind of action show that it is. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a great, it's great credit to the writers that they make this effort to, you know, you bring in a supporting kind of secondary characters, but they all have a very specific purpose on the show, and I think it's really neat to see that, and it's a great credit to Jonathan and to Adam and to the whole team of writers that they do that.
Absolutely. So let's talk about this shootout sequence. Matt Servito is just so wonderful in this scene with him and Platinum. Which is just
free therapy. Well, not, he's paying like $20 actually every second.
Yeah, it's a very well written scene. Because who else is he going to turn to?
His Servito's own money too. That was the scene he kept paying. It was.
Yeah. Who's he going to turn to? Yeah. His sounding board is dead. So the only person he can really go to for advice is Platinum.
Make it rain.
Yeah, and he really is. He's really going for the gusto there. And
I love that scene.
There's so much comedy in how casual he's talking with her, like, you know, everything up in his face and shaking it no, and he shakes his head no.
Like, and he's leaning away, like, almost as if the 2 inches of distance give it some kind of
morality.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
I will tell you guys, Matt Servito is just a masterful performer, and what's wonderful for us in season 3 is to finally open up the Brock Lotus character.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and again, he's not just comic relief on the show. His comedy, his levity, his one-liners are born out of his methodology for dealing with stress and anxiety. Mm-hmm. So everything sort of has a purpose, and that's Jonathan's mandate and the gift that he's given all of us, is that each one of his characters has dimension and nuance. Nobody is just a cardboard cutout. And even with Brock, yes, he's with Platinum with 2 M's. But, you know, there's a certain level of anxiety and self-doubt and concern, which of course is born out of the relationship that he has with his ex-wife, who obviously is now in the employ of Kai Proctor, and there's a lot more to be explored in the coming episodes there as well. But yeah, that scene serves a lot of purposes.
Yeah, well, and also you see him, like, the first thing he does when he hears the gunshots is pull her down. You know, so he's still got the same mind about, you know, doing the right thing.
He's always a cop. No matter what he's doing, he's a cop first.
That's his identity.
It's why his marriage got broken up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have this epic shootout. He calls for help. Billy Raven, Siobhan, on the way, just in the nick of time. Mm-hmm. And Siobhan gets Tommy Littlestone in the leg. He goes down, and as soon as you see her put that gun away, we're like, oh no.
Yeah, no.
Oh no. And he pulls that knife, and Billy Raven pops him right there. He doesn't want to, but he does it, and we're just like, oh, Billy Raven, you are screwed, man.
Yeah.
Your days are numbered,
and
Raven.
He knows it. You can see it all over his face and like his like almost like quivering lips.
This is like his brother.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
These are kids that he grew up with. These are people that he knows, that he's intimate with, that he just had to murder, had to kill.
He had to kill.
Okay, but killing in cold blood.
In self-defense.
In defense of his colleague, but still, I mean, that has to be colored a certain way, murder.
He's
got
to know exactly what's going on outside of, you know, or back down in the woods, and he knows what this means. This
he protected a white girl shot his brother.
But it's Chayton's brother, and he's already kind of seen as, like, some sort of traitor. You know, he's got, like, a lot of that stuff when he goes back to the reservation. So, like, really cool that he's just, like, he knows it, like, I'm a marked man at this point.
Again, it touches on the interconnectivity of the show, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, if we, earlier on in the episode, Chayton says it himself, casualties of a righteous war.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and Billy's own sort of, you know, connection to the, you know, to the reservation of the Kanaho. And as you said, you know, he knows this young kid. And of course, every action in Banshee has a reaction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's going to be a Banshee style reaction.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's such a nice performance from Jeff Kay that there's that one moment after he's killed him. There's just such a great reaction shot of sort of horror and dread. And also that he had to do it. Like, it was the right thing to do. That's what a cop does in that situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so the gray area of, and the dread of where, of the, what's gonna happen because of his actions, I just love the way that that's foreshadowed on the show. It's really great. And it's
absolutely.
A terrific performance by Jeff.
We need to move on. We need to talk about Sheriff Hood because apparently we only have 10 minutes left. Mm-hmm. And there's what? So much to talk about. I know, Matt, I know. So Sheriff Hood is caught at his door by Agent Phillips of the FBI, who's investigating the disappearance of Agent Racine, and he quickly squires him away, supposedly to New York, and Sheriff Hood isn't having none of that.
No.
So at the gas station, he breaks free, knocks him out.
There's always a choice.
Mm-hmm, until he gets just straight up tasered and wakes up in a truck that feels like an office from, like, I don't know, the late 80s? Mm-hmm. Late 80s, early 90s? Something like that. Mm-hmm. I feel like I once had a...
Our production designer right now is cringing, but thank you.
No! it just reminds me of a psychologist's office from when
it's
I was growing up.
But if you think about it, everything is attached to the walls because, of course, we reveal that it's actually a truck. So
right.
there was a nautical theme going on there.
Of course.
By the way, Fanchies, we are all drinking Bullet Old Fashions. That's
extra
right.
Sugar.
Yeah,
extra sugar. And we finally get to meet Brantley, who was alluded to last year from Jason Hood and from the guy who was sent to kill him. And he's just this... I love this character because you could have any kind of gangster. We had a very specific kind of gangster in Rabbit. We have a very specific kind of gangster in Kai. And Brantley... I love the moment where he's talking about the ledger and how every decimal point is important to him because with his size, there's not really much else. This is all that he has is what is his money.
Mm-hmm. Right. His identity, again.
Yeah.
And, you know, for us, the origin of this character was we've had a lot of really, you know, enigmatic and sort of, you know, memorable villains on this show. So how do you create yet another one? Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of this show comes back to people and their self-imposed prisons. Mm-hmm. So the starting point for us was a guy that was literally trapped in his own body.
Oh, cool.
You know, when he says, I failed my body, or maybe it's failed me. Yeah. But the notion of a man that has no control anymore and finds control in the smallest little things, and that's by, you know, having closure. And he can't move forward until one chapter is closed and he can move on to the... So that was really started with that. And then, you know, we found Shuler Hensley, you know, a tremendous actor, much like Dennis O'Hare, who did a wonderful job with Agent Robert Phillips, who's named after our venerable line producer, Bob Phillips, and really created, I believe, you know, yet another extremely memorable Banshee character.
Yeah.
As soon as you started talking about him, I laughed because I had the visual of the chunks of his body underneath the 18-wheeler.
Oh, man.
It was beautiful.
That's beautiful.
I will tell you also that fat suit, which was custom made, and that was a three-month process, you know, that involved the actual construction of the suit. We did shoot that in the middle of the summer in Charlotte, North Carolina, with 100% humidity.
Oh.
He was in that suit for hours upon hours, on top of the 4 to 5 hours of makeup chair time to get that thing going.
So while he was in this big fat suit, he was actually
losing
tons of weight.
Yeah, he was. He got smaller and smaller on the inside, even though the suit fit. Yeah.
I love the way that this scene played out. These electro gloves are incredibly brutal. I love the way that Hood handles it by shocking Brantley. And he finally gets free. I love this moment between him and the secretary, Wanda, where she shakily offers him the old-fashioned. And then obviously he has to take care of the driver and this very tense moment where he's waiting and waiting and waiting for the door to open. He shoots through. Maybe we got him. Oh, no. Blasting through. Mm-hmm. And then there's a moment of choice. I can rush off to Banshee, which is where I want to be, and leave this dude to his fate. He was a threat to me, and now he won't be.
Well, and we've seen Sheriff Hood made that man a promise.
Mm-hmm.
He's good about his word. He told him he was going to kill him.
Yep.
So he has to come back.
Yeah. So he heads back, and he prevents the murder of Agent Phillips, but then trains that gun on him, and then ultimately decides, you know what, no.
I have to touch on the fact that Agent Phillips knows this man's story. He knows his motivation on some level when he says that on some level you still want to be punished.
Yeah,
you know, after question. Acknowledging that he has got big balls, that maybe the thing that's wrong with him is that he's got this glutton for punishment complex, and that's why he's where he is.
Can you speak to that, Adam?
No, absolutely. You know, it always comes back. You know, my favorite line in this entire episode is when, you know, Agent Phillips looks at him and goes, you know, maybe you should think about how fucked up your universe
yes.
truly is if being in this chair right. is actually better than being on your way back to New York City to answer for your crime. And that's, you know, the constant, you know, struggle that this character has. He is directionless. He doesn't have a place in the world. Mm-hmm. And he is his own worst enemy.
Yeah.
And in Agent Phillips, in that hole, he finds a kindred spirit. You know, mm-hmm. it's really both of them have a hard time saving themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, and it really sure. is sort of a, you know, a thematic thing about the whole season and the whole show as a whole.
Mm. Yeah. All right, in our closing moments, Agent Phillips reveals that he had an insurance policy just in case Sheriff Hood was what he isn't anymore. Mm-hmm. And he races back to find Siobhan watching the tapes, reading the file, thoroughly wrecked, realizing that this man who Sugar tried to allege, you know, she knew well, even if she didn't know about him, apparently maybe not. Mm-hmm. And it's... I did not expect her to find out this early.
Well, let me touch on that really fast,
yeah.
because obviously it's been sort of the big sort of hanging element yeah. of this series is when are people going to find yeah. out? And it seemed for us that, you know, Siobhan, who represents Hood's one chance at humanity,
mm-hmm.
one chance at salvation, true love, as we started to see, there's really hope for the future, which is the first time we've seen it. How apropos is that she's the one that is the person to discover who he is. And, you know, again, when she looks at him and says, you know, who the hell are you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Keep watching. You may
yeah,
find
cool.
out.
It speaks to, like, the really great writing of the show because you've actually given him something that can cost, that he will be able to lose that really matters to him.
Yeah. On this point, I think it's time that we move to predictions. Sure. We can talk about it there.
And now, your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
So, what happens next? What happens next? And Matt's still here.
Yeah.
You've been.
Matt's still here. Matt's just listening. He likes the show. He's listening to the show.
Fantastic. Awesome. Manas, what happens? What's happened going from here?
Well, you know, I mean, Adam, personally, you say it gets better or bigger and better. I mean, you said that this episode has not. I mean, it just escalates from here. I don't see. I mean. This was such a grandiose episode, is what I'm saying. This seemed like a series finale. It seemed like a huge finale, so I don't know. I mean, I still don't want to see... I want to see this bank robbery. We only hinted at the Sugar and Joe. I want to see this. I hope Siobhan actually is going to be the new, you know, this Ocean's 11 gang. I hope she's the new member. Maybe we didn't see Carrie. Maybe Carrie is pushed to the side and Siobhan's the new... The new woman in the game.
Wow.
I don't know if she can open safes, but that's the same.
Maybe just
idea.
Remember there's no such thing as a Sweatpants Monday. Just
that's
remember
right.
that.
Yeah. There's no such thing as Sweatpants
Monday. Best line of the episode, by the way. I loved it.
I don't know, but I am excited to see what happens with Siobhan. I honestly was really disappointed because I'm still so in love with Carrie, Anna, and Lucas that I'm not buying Siobhan right now, but I'm excited to see where it goes. Like, just these flashes helped me understand the importance of their relationship, but I'm excited to see how she reacts and we get that visceral experience with her.
Yeah, no, I believe the Siobhan thing. That's why he had the flashbacks of her and Dava, not Carrie. My guess is we're going to see Carrie again because we got to at this point. And I think she's fed up with the diner. I think that's not long for this world.
Kaputsky?
Yeah, Kaputsky on the job.
Okay. Having seen the next three episodes, I cannot make any predictions. I'm probably as tickled as these two at hearing what you guys have to say. But in any case, is there anything you guys want to tease about what's coming?
They're all good theories. I'll say that.
Okay.
And I will honestly say, and maybe I'm a little bit biased, and Matt, you probably are too, I really believe that every episode continues to get bigger and better as the season goes on.
Oh, man.
I don't know, that's what I was going to say. As great and as action-packed and as big as episode 303 is, I know what's coming, and I can tell you that It's definitely not the finale of the season. There's a lot more to happen in Banshee, and it gets pretty extraordinary. It's a big season, and there's a lot of stuff coming.
Yeah.
Can't wait.
All right. I want to thank our guest, Adam Targum. Are you on Twitter at all? Can people find you?
I am on Twitter. I think it's at Adam Targum.
It is.
There you go. All right.
ADAMTARGUM. And Matt, you're also on Twitter?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter. My handle is Matty Rauch, MattyRauch.
Okay. Thank you so much for joining us. Folks, we're going to be here next week. Yes, absolutely. We're going to be here next week with an all new episode reviewing the fourth episode of the season three of Banshee. I checked the iTunes. There are no new reviews.
Oh, snap.
So maybe now's the time that you fill some in and get your sweet shout out here on the show. Monis Rose, where can the people find you?
On Twitter at restfiction.com. Just at Resh Fiction. That stands for restaurantfiction.com. Also on iTunes at Restaurant Fiction.
All right.
On Twitter at Miss Oriana Leo. We'll keep it short. Isaac?
On Twitter at Isaac Johnson. On YouTube, The Isaac Johnson, where you can see my own badass fight with a female.
Ooh.
It's called The Forge.
Cool. And you can find me on Twitter at Matt Lieberman, MattLieberman. My YouTube channel, youtube.com/MatthewDLieberman. SourceFed Nerd. Thank you all so much for joining us. We'll see you next week. Good night.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Fanshees rule!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.